Parvataya Pratibodhitam Bhagavata Narayanena Swayam Vyasena Kratitam Purana Munina Madhye Mahabharatam Advaitavarshinim Bhagavatim Ashtadashadhyayinim Ambatvamanu Sandhatami Bhagavad Gita Bhavadvaishini.
Okay, let's chant for chapter 12, verse 6 and 7. We're on verse 7, but we'll just chant it as a unit. Since these two go together.
Yetu sarvani karmani. Yetu sarvani karmani. Mayi sanyasya mataraha. Mayi sanyasya mataraha. Ananye naiva yogena. Ananye naiva yogena. Mam jayanta upasate. Mam jayanta upasate. Tesham aham samuddharta. Tesham aham samuddharta. Vichi samsara sagarat. Mithi samsara sagara bhavamina chirat partha bhavamina chirat partha maya veshita chetasam maya veshita chetasam.
So tesham, just put number 7, tesham aham samuddhartha mrityu samsara sagarat bhavami na chirat partha mayi aveshita chetasam. So just recapping the verse number 6, if you remember, it says yetu, referring to the karma yogis, okay, who are doing Sirguna Brahma Upasana, contemplating on Ishwara, contemplating on Ishwara's form. You know, if I do a meditation, I can resolve my mind into Brahman, just into conscious being. That's Akshara Brahma Upasana. Or if I'm just sitting, I just resolve my mind into being itself, into Brahman. Or I can do an Upasana where I'm evoking or bringing to mind the whole. Like, for instance, just in a simple way, if I kind of relax and I let myself give up any type of clinging or jivatvam. Just give it up and just allow for you to sit with the totality of your experience, so that the ahankara is now at this point not landing on the physical body, not landing on the mind, not landing on your likes or dislikes. It's just simply your being and this creation. The creation, whatever it is that you're experiencing, what you're experiencing. This is one type of... Okay. So, this one type of saguna brahma upasana, which is really beautiful, I think, because it's so simple. And you have to have knowledge, some understanding to do it. But if you just sit silently, really just giving up any type of clinging or any of this wanting anything to be different, but rather just let yourself be openly, totally present to what is in your experience. And if you recognize that the whole Maya Upadi, this little piece of it, you're experiencing as a jiva, this little tiny piece of it, through whatever vrittis are in your mind, whatever perceptions are there. But what you are experiencing is a little piece of Ishwara. It's not something else, it is Ishwara. And so by an infinite extension, the understanding of infinite extension, that this little piece of experience you have can be extended to the whole infinite creation. And so what is true for you, for the Atma, for your being, in reference to the totality of your limited experience, because limited mind and sense organs, that is the essential nature of the entire reality. You know, like for instance, you could just sit here and be totally just present to what is as Ishvara, you know, or you could imagine a form, a given form. You can imagine Ishvara as a form, like or as your Ishta Devata, as Dakshinamurti, where Dakshinamurti, that form, brings to your heart, to your being, Ishvara. You know, or you could imagine your own visualization of the entire Ishvara Swarupa, the entire cosmos, you know, which is difficult. But it doesn't matter what it is. As long as you recognize that what the totality of what you're experiencing is Ishvara. Any imagination you have, that is Ishvara. You know? What makes a jiva is when you come into that, when the ahankara comes into that and takes a position within it, especially in terms of raga dvesha. You know, you take a position within it and you want this to happen or you want this to happen, you want this to be different or that to be different. But if you give up all of that and just simply, you know, recognize your own presence with all of these, not trying to get rid of the maya. You don't try to get rid of the maya at all, or the duality. You just simply let it be and recognize it as Bhagavan. And you can do that in any form that you want to. Just that's the Saguna Brahma Upasana, because you're recognizing your being as not away from this, that this, the totality of your experience, is your upadi. Not just this body, mind, sense organs. That you are really the self of the entire experience. Like say you're sitting, your eyes are closed, and you're hearing sounds, and you have a sense of the room. You know, in the sense of the physical body, there are sensations. There can be the sensations of the physical body. There can be thoughts, you know, multiprocessing, walking through your mind. There can be sound sensations. There can be the wind. Everything that's there is taking place in you, not just your body. The entire experience is taking place in you, and then you recognize that as Ishvara. Now, these type of meditation, Saguna Brahma Upasana, this is just an example, there's many, it's not like there's just one. There's many, but what it is that meditation is you're recognizing your own being, you know, as being the self of the totality of your experience. And so when you're recognizing the totality of your experience in meditation, then when you come out into the world, you recognize the totality of your experience, you know, as Ishvara. So this is Ishvara. That being so, if you're recognizing this is Ishvara, then everything you're doing is within Ishvara, is in relationship to Ishvara. You know, and so when that's, then there's a certain reverence and a certain bhakti that comes, you know. But all of this, these words like bhakti, bhakti is not apart from your knowledge. It's the knowledge, your knowledge, that really gives you that bhakti. Because when you say to be able to say, I am the whole, right, that this is really all my being, you know, when you say those type of words, it can come back to an ahankara. It's as though, yeah, this is all me, and then the me is still located in the body. But when you do that kind of Saguna Brahma Upasana, you recognize that this me is Ishvara. This Atma is Brahman. This Brahman, the self that I am, is the self of all beings, is the self of the creation. And then I sit in that reality of that, and I put on to it. And in fact, one of the wonderful recognitions is the this body, mind, sense organs, this person here, you know, is part and parcel of Ishwara, who I am. But Ishwara is not a foreign being. Ishwara is me. Not this body, mind, sense organs, but the very self that is the self of this body, mind, sense organs is the very self that is the self of all beings and is the self of the creation. So this is, it is a personal self. It's a personal self because it is me. That's why it's a personal self. It's not like a universal self. There is no universal self. There is only one self, and that self is me. But what I have to recognize is that this self that is me, that I say I to, that I am, then I have to be able to say that I am, which is referring to me, this very personal me, I am you. The very me that I am now is not like you, it is you. Yeah. It's not like we're twins. It's that the I that I am is you. The I that I am is Ishwara. That's why this dream drishtanta becomes so important, because you can understand in a dream the I that I am is the I that all beings are. They don't have different eyes. There is only one I, and that one I is the self of the whole dream. Right? And so that's why I can say, for the jnani can say, I am Ishwara. Like it just, subjectively, I can say just as a jiva, I can say, I am the dream. The dream comes from me. It's sustained by me. It resolves back into me. I am it. I am the conscious being which it enjoys. I am Ishwara, in reference to the dream. So you can say, yeah, that's true. Yeah? And the problem with all of the jivas in the dream is that they don't know that. It's true for them, but they have self-ignorance. That's all. But the I, the conscious being that each one of those dream characters enjoys, is only me. Is the very me that is the self of all beings, the self of the trees, the self of the rocks, the self of the animals, the self of all the humans, the self of the whole. And so the problem with any jiva born within the, as part and parcel of the dream, is going to be limited by the ajnanam, because they are that consciousness, but the mind that's reflecting it, the upadhi, right, only has a limited perspective. And so that little mind, that little dream character mind says, I am the conscious being. But were that dream character to drop dead, like we all will, all these upadhis will drop dead, what happens to me, the conscious being? Just think about it. It's my dream, right? But I'm identified with a character in it. And then there's all the other characters too. Say all of the characters drop dead in the dream.
Drop dead.
They all drop dead. Is there any death? Is there any death? Nothing happens. Just like when you wake up from a dream, the whole dream universe is gone. Nothing happens. And that's the reality. That is the reality. So each dream character thinks, you know, oh, I am a personal me, and I'm a personal me, and I'm a personal me, based upon our different body, mind, sense organs. But there is no personal me. There's just me. There's no universal me. There's no personal me. There is just me. And this me, this conscious being, the very nature of I, is the self. The me that I am, it is the self of all beings, and it is the self of Ishwara. And so, as I start to really understand that, what is so comforting about it is that Ishwara, or the whole Maya Upadhi, the whole manifestation of the Maya, is what Swamiji will call infinite intelligence. It is infinite knowledge, where this mind, you know, that comes into manifestation and becomes unmanifest, like in deep sleep, for instance, and then is manifest right now, your mind now is having this particular experience, but it's holding a tremendous amount of knowledge. Some of it may be an unmanifest condition, but it's there. Like, for instance, if I ask you right now to think of an elephant, I'm sure you weren't thinking of one before I asked you to think of one. That elephant is there in your knowledge bank, and it comes into manifestation on a subtle level, you know, in the form, in your mind, if I ask you to think of it. And so you have a huge repertoire of knowledge, just as your limited mind for any human being. Ishvara is the limitless knowledge, limitless repertoire, because it's the whole Maya Upadhi. Okay, this body, mind, sense organs is only a part of that limitless knowledge. Within the part of the limitless knowledge, limitless manifestation, you have limited knowledge, which is quite a bit, but it's certainly nothing compared to the universe, right? But that Maya manifestation is the manifestation that comes, it's the Maya that comes from the self, is sustained by the self and resolves into the self. And this body, mind, sense organs is part of that limitless knowledge. And so you, as a part of that, you from this standpoint, with this limited knowledge, can look to, limited knowledge, can look to your limitless knowledge for understanding, for guidance, for, I mean, who, I would say like this, I trust more in limitless knowledge than I do in limited knowledge. And so, when I find myself moment to moment, this body, mind, sense organs, which has limited knowledge just because of the upadhi, I like to see how limitless knowledge, Ishvara, right, is handling the situation, the prarabdha. How is Bhagavan, is Ishvara, playing this out in the form of your life and your prarabdha? And so you are held by a greater self, I can put it that way. Yeah. Like if you just think of the dream manifestation, that story, that is your story. That is you. That manifestation is a manifestation of you. That dream Maya. And so the dream characters are playing a part in that manifestation. They have a part to play. They're part of the story. It's not really the story of the individuals in the dream. The dream is the story. And the individuals are part and parcel of the story. Do you see what I mean? And a little individual with the ahankara says, well, I want the story to be like this. And I think that I should get this and that and this. Well, the whole dream may have a different agenda, you know. And so in this gaining of antakarana shuddhi, you know, that's why if you can imagine a dream scenario, when we talk about antakarana shuddhi, karma yoga, it is really the jiva's recognizing its role in the whole story. Not creating its own role, but recognizing its role in relationship to Ishvara, in relationship to the whole. And that's what we mean by following dharma. You know, what is my part in this situation? You know, what is my place in this situation? Where it's a continually, really, it's a pranam, it's a continual relationship with Ishvara. And in doing that, that relationship is what's important. So I see everything as Ishvara. See what I mean? And so here, what he's saying to start with, he says, you know, those karma yogis, you know, who have, for whom I, Ishvara, am paramount, Ishwara is what is. So that, for me, that is everything. Matpadaha. It's for the, this karma yogi. For Matpadaha. Ishwara is everything. You know? That is my whole life is in relationship to Ishwara. That's Matpadaha. And with that, all of my karmas are committed to that. All the actions that I do, everything, is sannyasya. It's offered to Bhagavan. It's in relation to Bhagavan, to Ishwara. With ananyena eva yogena, without any other attachment. Yoga can be attachment. Ananyena, without any at all, without any other attachment. That is my attachment. Bhagavan is my attachment. And so meditating on me, doing the Saguna Brahman Vipassana, where I meditate, contemplate, I spend time recognizing that fact, and then I go through my day, right? Meditating on me. Those who do that, worshiping me means recognizing. I see this, all experience, as Ishwara, as Bhagavan. Then he says, Tesham aham samudharta. For those people, I become the rescuer. I'm the one that rescues, that pulls out. I pull you out. I become the one who pulls you out of what? Mrityu samsara sagarat. I pull, like a drowning person is pulled out. So I pull you out from the sagara, from the ocean of samsara. Samsara sagara. Sagara is ocean. So I rescue you from the ocean of samsara, which is mrityu yukta, which is totally fraught with death. Hear that, mrityu samsara sagara. There's a word, there's some, you make these certain types of compounds where sometimes a word drops out, you have to put the word in, it's a particular type of compound. So here, mrityu means death. Death means birth and death, change. So from the sagara of samsara, otherwise you would say, which is mrityu. You don't, I can say, which is mrityu. Which is full of, which is fraught with, which is yukta, which is associated with mrityu, which is fraught with death. So for those people, I become the samudharata, the savior, the one who pulls you, frees you from the ocean of samsara, fraught with death. So bhavami means I become. And then he says, na chirat. Not after a long time. Chirat means, it's an adverbial, means a long time. Na chirat. Not after a long time. Don't worry, it doesn't take a million lifetimes. So. Na chirat. Because we've been here traveling lifetime after lifetime for so a million would be nothing. We've been around for beginningless lifetimes. But once you recognize the problem, once you become a mumukshu, then which is like the last, you know, it's the end game in chess, it's the end game. So once you become a mumukshu, that's the end. So now you're at the final stage. So he says, so once you've see this, you know, remember that all of these people are gaining knowledge. This is not pre-knowledge. They're all gaining knowledge. But with this Saguna Brahma Upasana and Karma Yoga, this Antakarana Shuddhi, where I recognize this Jivatvam, this Jiva is part and parcel of Ishwara. And so I become devoted to Bhagavan. You know? And with that, the Ahankara becomes, you know, dissipates, it becomes less and less and less, because Bhagavan becomes more and more and more. And so first I see this whole universe, my whole universe of experience is Bhagavan, and slowly I put the body into that universe of experience, and then slowly I put the sense organs in, and then the mind goes in, and then finally the Ahankara goes in, and then I'm a jnani, right? Because I am Brahman, I am the self, you know, who is the self of this whole, and this body, mind, sense organs is Ishwara, right? This is we can say it's part of Ishwara, like everything else is part of Ishwara, Right? So this is Ishvara, this is Ishvara, this is Ishvara. The whole is Ishvara. The whole universe is Ishvara. And Ishvara, and the self of Ishvara is Brahman. Right? So the self of Ishvara is the self of me. The self of Ishvara is myself. If I give the body to Ishvara, I give the sense organs to Ishvara, I give the mind to Ishvara, the moods, the emotions, the relationships, the ahankara to Ishvara, then the total Maya experience is Ishvara, which includes this body, mind, sense organs. And then what is left out is just the Atma, which is now, I recognize, is not contained. Atma is not contained. It's not like a little pea in the pod, like the Atma is just a little thing in this body. Atma is the self of all experience. Atma is Brahman. Right? And so I let this body and this prarabdha unfold, you know, which it is doing, like it or not, whether we look at it that way or not. Your life is unfolding, and you can't stop that. This event, and this event, this event. Your mind can go, nah! You know, can be doing all kinds of things in reaction to the unfolding life, or it can be interested in the unfolding life. You know? It can be related to the unfolding life as Ishvara. So he says, one who understands this, you know, one for whom I become, the one who pulls them out of this mrityu saga, a samsara saga, not after a long time, he parta. And who are those people? Mayi aveshita chetasam. For those people whose mind is aveshita, absorbed in me. Mm-hmm. Now, for the mind to be absorbed in me means what? Mm-hmm. Every experience that I have is Bhagavan. That the mind is absorbed in me. There is no other experience. Right? Any experience you have is Ishvara. There is not an experience outside of Ishvara. Okay? And so that's the Mayaveshita Chetasam. And for such a person, so for such people like that, Bhagavan says, you know, I become their savior, because it's not like some magic. You know, it's that understanding, that way of relating, brings about the antakarana shuddhi, that purity of mind, means the ahankara is becoming less and less dominant. You know, the ahankara is just what makes you a jiva, really. You know, I want this and I need that to be different. That's what the ahankara is. That's what makes the ahankara, raga dvesha is what makes the ahankara come into manifestation. I need this. Actually, you don't need anything. You really don't need anything. Because the ananda that you're searching for is your being. And so you let Ishvara be, and it's the body, mind, sense organs are included in that. You know, and you enjoy your fullness. None of that works. You know, let Ishvara be. If you are not the ananda, if your being is not the wholeness that you seek, then I have to do something about that, because I'm seeking wholeness. Every being is seeking wholeness, completeness, ananda. You know? And so it's only in the recognition that I am the very ananda that I seek, and there's nothing that can be done about it. I can't do anything about it, and neither can Bhagavan. Nobody can do anything about it. With that recognition, then I can let Ishvara be. And I can let this body, mind, sense organs go through its prarabdha and be present to it. Because I don't need for it to be this way or that way for me to be whole and complete. The jiva rises its head and raises its head immediately as I say, I need it to be this way. You know, and then all of a sudden the world divides up into who's going to help it be this way and who's not going to help it be this way, and what's going to happen to me if it's not this way. And I create a whole maya around myself, a whole, you know, net around myself. But what if my mind is not saying that it has to be this way or that way, but it's just interested in how it actually is? I can be interested in how it is if I'm okay. But if how it is something that is dangerous to me or hurtful to me, then that's not true. Okay? So that understanding brings about an antakarana shuddhi that allows this, instead of having like the mind being like newspaper holding burning coals, the mind becomes something that is very comfortable by its nature. It's very comfortable holding this knowledge. It's not like a hot potato. This knowledge is like kind of a hot potato for the ego, for the ahankara, because I want things to be a certain way. And so the ego is, the knowledge is just kind of searing through that newspaper, burning it. So but what about when that karmayoga buddhi, that saguna brahma upasana, which really thins out that ahankara, because I'm actually relating to Ishwara, even though that jivatvam is there, I'm relating to Ishwara. I'm relating to the universe as the universe is, even though I'm kind of still outside of it. But I'm very, very close. My behavior, I'm very close to Jnani. And so this knowledge, this mind becomes a good receptacle for this vision. And so Bhagavan Krishna gives the means for gaining antakarana shuddhi for anybody who wants that, really. And then for the mumukshu, he makes this knowledge available. Not through a tap or a shaktipat, but through bringing every student to the teaching that they need in order to be free. And that's the promise of the Upanishads and the Sampradaya, and he's saying that here also. I take care of it. I take care of all of it. Even the antakarana shuddhi, I take care of all of it. And that's why sometimes we say, Bhagavan just does not give me a break. He doesn't give a break. No breaks. Because whenever there's I need this to be this way, then he'll make sure to screw it up a little bit for you. So he goes, okay, I don't really need it that way. Until finally you don't even ask. You just start appreciating how it is. In a sense, really, the ananda, or the only ananda that your mind has ever experienced at any time, is only the nature of your being. And so the more you give up requiring things to be different and just dealing with what is there, the more shanti your mind enjoys. That's the truth of it. And the shanti in the mind is what gives you the feeling of wholeness and completeness, because it's like a clear water bucket reflecting the sun. That shantavritti allows for the sun to kind of be manifest in it, and you feel comfortable with that. And so that karma yoga buddhi allows the mind to be calm. And then there's a reward for that calmness, which is that reflection of the self in the mind. And there comes a time when you don't need the mind to be calm or anything. It's irrelevant to the absolute calmness of you, of the self. Mm-hmm. No matter what the mind's, if it's a little wavy here and there, it doesn't make any difference, because of it's backed and has for its essential nature your own being, which is ananda. The ananda, which is only the nature of your being, not these bliss vrittis that take place in the mind. It's not that. It's just the who you are. That's why when you have these meditations, you can just sit, you can ask, who am I? What am I like? And finally you start, become shocked at how precious your being is to you. That there's nothing more precious. That is the ananda. Mm. That recognition, there is nothing more dear to me than me. And of course, that me is the Satchitananda, it is Ishwara. Okay. take a minute. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om. Hi, Lisa. Hi, Anne. Hi, Baba.
What do you do with the idea that I'm responsible for what I become?
Well, that's that. As long as that kartritvam is there, that doership, sense of doership is there, then you're subject to dharma. You know, that one, because there is free will. It's like a muscle. It's a capacity that every jiva has. And so since you have choice at that level of things, you know, and you need to exercise your choice properly, you know, in terms of dharma.
But on the other hand, you're saying all of this activity is Ishvara.
Is Ishvara, including the ability to have choice. Everything that exists within duality.
So you can make a choice, but what you're responsible for your activity.
I'll tell you what. But this is the problem.
Yeah.
Is that when I am super, this is why choice becomes even an issue, mm-hmm. where I have to make decisions and choices.
Yeah.
It's because I superimpose my mind, superimposes ananda onto the world, onto an object in the world or a situation. Now, that's what that's really like. What I'm actually doing is superimposing myself, because I am the ananda. So I'm superimposing myself onto an object. And I have to get that back. I have to get myself back.
Yeah, the outcome.
Yeah. And so now, since it's superimposed onto an object, which is away from me, and I need to get it back, mm-hmm. then I can use, you know, inappropriate means to get that back, because it's very important to me. And so therefore I have to follow dharma. I have to put dharma first, you know, before my raga dvesha. My raga dvesha is always in reference to this thing that I've superimposed my ananda in. Now I need it. And the dvesha, the dislike and the hatred, all of these things, that will come toward anything that's obstructing me in any way from fulfilling my desire to get myself back, really. That's the superimposition. You know, and so then this choice and dharma, adharma, and all of these things become operational. Whereas when I'm whole and complete, then I just simply do what needs to be done, because dharma becomes natural. We are natural dharmis. You know, it's only when a desire comes up that then I can veer off that natural course. I mean, people are basically good. Because at bottom line, you are the whole, you know. So you're basically fine. But because of ajnanam, you know, you get into trouble.
Well, my well-being does depend on the outcome of this event.
Exactly, to you.
Yeah.
As long as that's the case, that my well-being depends upon the outcome of this event, you can, you know, be all kinds of things. You can become all kinds of things, you know. You can be nasty, you can be rude to the people that are you can get frustrated, you know, frustrated and irritated and dislike certain people because they're not helping you to get what you need. This whole maya, this whole, you know, world, you know, samsara,
So what do you do to shut that down? Or
what? That's what that Saguna Brahma Upasana and Karma Yoga Buddhi is about. In the light of this teacher. Remember in the Gita, Bhagavad Gita is for the mumukshu. You know? And so, what are the means for gaining antakarana shuddhi? We say the sadhana is twofold. One sadhana, it's called upaya nishta. The upaya nishta means that committed life around that which is to be gained. What is to be gained is knowledge. So that sadhana is shravana, manana, nididhyasana. You know, listening and then working with that material, questioning it. I've just gone through this in nididhyasana. So shravana, manana, nididhyasana. The upayanishta has to do with the container, the one that's going to gain the knowledge. That one needs antakarana shuddhi. It needs a mind that is available for that knowledge. When we say pure mind, that can be kind of misleading. What does it mean to have a pure mind? Well, it means a mind that can hold this knowledge, that is available to gain it. You know? That isn't distracted by all of the different desires that, you know, I want knowledge, but I want this and I want that. And so that Karma Yoga Buddhi with Saguna Brahma Upasana, this is what what Krishna says, this is the best. Karma Yoga with Saguna Brahma Upasana, where you do meditation upon Ishvara, you know, and then all of your actions are with Ishvara in mind, where Dharma itself is Ishvara. The choices I make are choices for Dharma, are choices. I choose Ishvara. I don't choose my raga dvesha. And why do I choose Ishvara? Why do I choose Dharma? For moksha. Because I'm a mumukshu. That's why I'm involved in all of this. Yeah.
You were saying Karma Yoga Siguna Upasana.
Karma Yoga is that Karma Yoga Buddhi, you know, where type of meditation called Saguna Brahma Upasana.
Okay.
As opposed to just what they call Akshara Brahma Upasana, which is just which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. It's just for for the mind to thin out the ahankara, contemplating on this universe as Ishvara, and letting this body, mind, sense organs be part of Ishvara. Seeing it that way, seeing my prarabdha as Ishvara, or seeing all the as the life unfolds, seeing that as Ishvara, so you can meditate upon that, and then as your life is unfolding, then you've contemplated on your relationship to that. So that as your life unfolds throughout the day, you've set yourself up to recognizing that prarabdha karma as Bhagavan, and then you behave toward your prarabdha karma as you would behave toward Bhagavan. Like the example is if you're going to temple, you know, and you go through the puja, and at the end Bhagavan gives out the prasad, then, you know, you take that prasad with a reverence. It's an attitude.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it's that attitude is very Indian, so you have to kind of translate it into who we are. Yeah.
You were also saying you become comfortable in holding the knowledge or something like in that way. Is it really the Buddhi becomes comfortable in holding this knowledge?
Well, you know, with the
what
it's the Buddhi that's really doing that Karma Yoga.
Yeah.
And so the Buddhi is what gains so much strength from that. And then that attitude of the Buddhi is something that is directed toward all experience, including the experience of the manas, all of the experience that's coming up in the mind, all of the complexes that are coming up, all of the reactions that are coming up. Those experiences are held by the Buddhi. you know, with a certain attitude.
So it's like the shift from the manas running the show to the buddhi kind of getting more in charge, and the manas
and then
starting
the,
to serve the buddhi.
And then the buddhi getting in charge with a certain attitude, where the buddhi is actually pranamin to Ishvara.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So its choices are not any longer toward raga dvesha, they're toward dharma. But that doesn't mean that there's no raga dvesha. Mm-hmm. And also, if the raga dvesha, the raga, is often just one with dharma,
mm-hmm.
then we don't call it raga.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We call raga dvesha. Raga dvesha becomes raga dvesha when it's creating a conflict with dharma. Otherwise, it's not even noticeable, really.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It's when that conflict is there. And then what are you going to choose? And so if your mind is set, that I would choose dharma. And you know what? The other thing is, you can think of that as a sacrifice, but actually the reward is so much greater in terms of the shantavritti. And so you become, it's like there's a carrot, in a sense, because the reward of choosing dharma also is greater than choosing any type of raga or dvesha that goes against dharma, because that always has, you know, guilt and conflict involved with it. And so when you choose the dharma, then your mind has a deeper peace. And so you get used to that. You prefer that over any raga or dvesha that's conflicts with dharma.
What
dharmic choice? Well, you know, for all of us, there's what we call the sadharana dharma. But that is just, really, the bottom line is the golden rule. And in India, they say it in two ways. Do unto others as you would have done to yourself, and don't do to others as you wouldn't have done to yourself. And so that's just an overarching dharma. And on top of that is ahimsa, non-injury. That's just a one word, you know. And then the golden rule, and they say this in many different cultures in their own language, in their own way. But then there are other, underneath that, there's all other kinds of duties. You know, like if you're a mother, you have a dharma, you know, toward your child. You know, a responsibility. And that responsibility has to come first over your raga dvesha. If it didn't, that little child would be in a lot of trouble. You know, toward your partner, toward your job, we have so many responsibilities where the world expects certain things from us. And it's our duty. In India, it's all about duty. It's not about rights. Swamiji's often said, if everybody just did their duty, we'd all be fine.
You know, what happens here is that the duties and your likes and dislikes, you don't always have a 10 minutes to figure it all out. It all happens fast, and you don't know quite where you are going to, what side of the fence you're going to be on.
It doesn't happen that fast.
Huh?
Only once in a while. You have the intent.
Huh?
You have the intent.
How do you balance out, like, here, Arjuna, his duty is to kill. Balance out with ahimsa.
What?
One of the things I do is I'm a lawyer, and that involves being a warrior.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Well, you know, in the whole Dharma Shastra, and it's called the Artha Shastra also, there's the art of war. War has been part of humanity forever, you know. And so there are rules to war. And so if war is part of humanity, then if you're going to be at war, there's certain there's a dharma around war. And if and you have to follow that dharma. So this is actually it's an interesting question for you to bring up because the whole Mahabharata is that.
Yeah.
You know, it's amazing. So the first thing is to think, well, is war part of being a human being? Then you can say, no. War should not be part of being a human being. That should not be in the cards. And we can say, okay, it shouldn't be in the cards. It's just that it always has been.
Mm-hmm.
And since it always has been, there's a dharma to war. And what Krishna is saying, dharma, the dharma in the society has been attacked
mm-hmm.
by Duryodhana. Dharma itself has been attacked. You are a kshatriya, which is the caste that he's in. It is your duty to protect the dharma. And so you have to fight. And but before you fight, and this has already happened in the Mahabharata, there's all these steps that you go through to try to resolve the problem without war. But if you can't resolve the problem, you go through this, first you try this, I can't remember the list, but there's four of them. First you try this, and then you try this, and then you try this. And not until you've gone through all of these things do you then wage war.
The
war is for the protection of dharma.
Arjuna, the reason he went to war is because Duryodhana wouldn't even let him have one grain of sand. He wanted him off the
path. Yeah, but that's true. But there's a whole story that went on before that, you know, that caused all of that.
And he had spent 12 years in the forest and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, to try to fulfill their obligation.
Right.
But then at the end of fulfilling
Well, the demands became impossible, right? I mean, finally. Isn't that...
Well, the demands became adharmic. They did all of that. They did everything on their side. And anyway, it's too complex.
Okay.
I can't get into the whole Mahabharata right now.
Could you go back to the Akshara? What was the Akshara about?
Akshara Brahma Upasana is where the sannyasis, where you just, instead of, see, if you're, either way, it's a beautiful contemplation, but the Saguna Brahma Upasana is when you're seeing the self, you're seeing this is Ishwara, you know, and this body, mind, sense organs, there's still for a karma yogi, there's still an ahankara there. You know, so I am worshipping Ishwara, and I see all of my experience as Ishwara. But as you gain knowledge, what happens is you can still be doing that Saguna Brahma Upasana, but there's, that is just the whole, and I'm the self of the whole. As Brahman, I am Brahman. But when you start out, your relationship as a jiva with this world is a relationship with Ishwara. And so the raga dvesha is not your choice anymore. What is your choice is dharma. Right? But Akshara Brahma Upasana is just sitting where I'm just sitting and resolving my mind into Brahman, into the self, and just sitting with that. And until that ahankara has become thinned a little bit, you know, it's the Saguna Brahma Upasana is better. Not that there's anything wrong with just sitting with yourself, but this body, mind, sense organs has to become part of the creation. It has to become part of Ishwara. In fact, the surrender, when we talk about surrender, the surrender is the surrender of the jiva to Ishwara. Right? Because that allows this body, mind, sense organs to be part and parcel of Ishwara. And that yourself is now not just the self of the jiva, you know, the body, mind, sense organs, upadi, it's the self of the whole. So that's the Akshara Brahma Upasana. Akshara means immutable. So Brahman, which is immutable, which is changeless, which is the very nature of the, which is the self, Satchitananda. So I could just sit, you know, just be with myself. Without no world, just be with myself. But then I open my eyes, and here's the world. And here I am. And so this jivatvam, in relationship to the world, has to thin out the ahankara. Here I am, and here's the world, and I have to make my way.
And that's where the Siguna Brahma
Upasana becomes
comes in.
Yeah. Because now I'm relating to the world of experience as Ishvara.
With Ramana, he seemed to just stick with the Akshara.
More or less. He was Upadesha Sarab. He does talk a little bit about Ishvara, but his main pedagogy, in terms of what he would write about, is just more to do with the nature of the self. Not that he doesn't have the other, but that his texts that we do, Satdarshanam and Upadesha Saram, are more involved on making the person recognize the self.
But it seems like he can't live a life just stuck there. It seems like Ishvara should be part of your life, because the mind is like that and the body is like that.
That's why it's important. It's there in Ramana. It's just not his focus. But you also find that, the different Upanishads have, they're all have the same vision, but they're putting emphasizing different things. Could be emphasizing Ishvara, they could be emphasizing the Atma, they could be emphasizing the identity, they could be emphasizing different types of karma yoga, or types of meditation, or they can be doing all of them. But all of them have the same Mahavakya as what we call the Tatparya. What they're actually saying is the Mahavakya, Tatvamasi, or Aham Brahmasmi. Everything resolves there in the Mahavakya. That is the teaching, in fact. Everything else is supportive of that, taking you to that.
So he kind of bypassed the Siguna Brahma Upasana, huh? Ramana? Yeah, in a certain way.
I don't look at it like that. That he's bypassing or not bypassing. Ramana was a person. he was just a person, a very extraordinary person, who did a tremendous amount of contemplation. He probably came into this life with incredible samskaras.
Yeah.
And then the devotees started coming around him and asking him all of these questions. Initially, he didn't have much shastric knowledge. And he would just always direct. So they're asking him all this stuff, these questions,
mm-hmm.
And he keeps... What's the most useful? I could just kind of think of how his mind might be thinking. What is the most useful for them? It's always to direct it back on who is the one asking.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what he put his emphasis on, as just kind of a simple person trying to make these people see what he saw. And then he was later on taught all of the Upanishads, which of course he only had to be taught once because he already was that, And so as he was being taught, he was just, And then he could use that just to some degree when he was teaching.
Mm-hmm.
But he wasn't somebody who was what we call a Shrotriya. He's a Brahmanishta. The Shrotriya means somebody who's really gone through all of the Shastras, all of the Upanishads, and has
mm-hmm.
experienced the whole teaching methodology and can pass that on to the student. Shrotriya Brahmanishta means their life is totally, committed to or to Brahman, however you want to say that. Brahmanishta
mm-hmm.
means their whole mind, what they are, what they do is that. That's Brahmanishta. Shrotriya comes from Shruti. They have the Shruti, which means they have that teaching methodology. So Ramana wasn't somebody who was about having trained and trained to have this teaching methodology, have experienced, experienced that. He got that at one point, but that wasn't his... But it was for him.
Mm-hmm.
He did get it, and it turned a corner for him. And he didn't have to meditate anymore because he realized that he never wasn't meditating.
Mm.
It's not that he gave up meditation. He just realized that he was never not meditating. You don't have to have your eyes open or shut, or you don't have to be sitting or walking. It doesn't make any difference at all. He saw that. And it's pointed out. So.
When you talk about returning the body, mind, sense organs to Nishwar, I'm wrestling with, you know, what does that mean in practical terms? And it seems like largely it comes down to the manas emotionally surrendering any kind of resistance or, you know, letting go of raga dvaishas. It's not that those things are ever really separate from Ishwara. They just appear to be because of our
ignorance. Yeah.
And it seems that it shows up most strongly as an emotional kind of resistance.
Well, I think the emotions that are what cause us are pain. You know, you were saying something, but I lost it.
I'm not sure. I'm just trying to get a handle on it. It's like, how do you return those to Ishwara?
It's not an act. It's a knowledge.
Mm.
It's because it's already a fact.
Mm-hmm.
It's already that way.
Yeah.
And so, what is if the
there's an illusion that they're separate.
There's an illusion, and so as the illusion is removed, that is the surrender. It's not an act of surrender. It's that the knowledge is the surrender, right? So you're surrendering ignorance, in a way.
So it's more the buddhi than the manas.
What do you...
Yes. Okay.
Yeah, that's right.
So if you have a really sad emotion, and you see the entire creation is Ishwara...
Uh-huh.
You see that belonging to the jiva or to Ishwara, or where is...
It can be something... Well, the jiva twin belongs to Ishwara in a sense, because there's nothing that doesn't belong to Ishwara, right? But you can say, how do you handle that emotion? You learn how to handle the emotion. What was the question?
Oh, maybe it's late.
Actually, that's right.
Late.
What were you saying?
It's late.
Go throw some cool water in
the face. What it also takes into a really deep place, you know, this whole contemplation. It's like, it's a certain, you know, it's also kind of interesting when I think about Ramana and, you know, I thought about that many, many years ago when I was down there in Tiruvannamalai. And how many people, I mean, he was like, he got this whole vision, like an instant vision, right? And then he talks to people who want to kind of, are also interested in that vision, obviously. But they're just the distance in terms of the recognition.
Well, the student comes to the teacher, right? And they come with their own ignorance. Everybody does that comes to their teacher.
Right.
They come not knowing and wanting to know.
Right, but I'm just saying, like, that's the same that applies to all of us, right?
Yeah.
But this gradual unfolding, which I feel like what we're going through here is, even that is such a laborious unwinding process. But if that's not even in place, I mean, how can you even grasp somebody like Ramana? I mean, it's kind of an impossible thing in a certain way.
Well, he just didn't talk about it. I mean, he did sit in a cave for 11 years.
Right.
He was an exception.
No, I'm clear. I'm talking about the people, the students. I'm talking about the students, you know, and how hard it was for them to actually grasp his vision.